Physical healing was a big part of Jesus' public ministry, as we know. We have countless stories of him healing people. In today's gospel, Jesus is going around, and not only is he healing, but it's as if healing power is overflowing from him, and it says at the end of the gospel, anyone who touched the tassel on his cloak was healed. Earlier, we learned that the woman with the hemorrhage, she touched his cloak, but she touched it with faith. And Jesus explained to her, it's your faith that has made you whole. Here, we don't have any mention of faith. It's as if he's just walking through the marketplace and anybody who happens to reach out and touch his cloak is healed. So remarkable healing power flowing from Jesus and even from his garments. Now, this is to reveal who Jesus is. He has not an ordinary human effect on people. He has a divine effect on people. He has divine power. In our own prayer, very often we're praying for healing. If you look at our community prayer chain, you can see what most people request prayers for is for healing. Yeah, we pray for other things too. Right? We pray for circumstances and jobs and conflicts in family life and this sort of thing. But very, very often, it's someone's sick, someone had a stroke, someone had a heart attack, someone was in an accident, and yeah, we pray for their healing when they're having a surgery. And that's right. We should do that. We should be agents of bringing the sick people to touch the tassel of Jesus' cloak, as they are in today's gospel. We also know, though, that Jesus, even though it says here, he healed everybody who touched his cloak, he didn't heal everybody in the world, and he doesn't heal everybody we pray for, not in the way that we want him to. Because his mission isn't only physical healing. That's part of his mission, but that's not even the central part. His mission is to reunite us with the Father, to set us free from the grip of sin and death. His mission is to bring us into eternal glory, yes. If sickness brings us closer to God, he'll use it. If a healing will bring us closer to God, he'll heal us. So that's how we can understand why some are cured and some are not, although it's very difficult for us to understand how he figures out what's going to work, but we trust that he knows what he's doing. But part of what we're reflecting on here is not just his ministry back then to bring about healing, but his presence in creation. We're going to reflect on creation in a moment because that's today's first reading. But this gospel reveals it's not God up there and creation down there. It's God in creation. It's divine power made available right in the midst of our need. It's the Word through whom everything was made. He himself is made flesh. The Word takes on the human condition. And that's why he can walk around the countryside of Galilee. That's why he wears a garment that has tassels on it, because he's become flesh, human nature. And it's Jesus' humanity that makes available to us in our humanity this divine power. He's the contact point with God. He's the meeting point between heaven and earth. So we're right to turn to him for healing. And that's a uniquely human experience, isn't it? I mean, angels don't pray for their healing because they don't get sick. Angels are agents of healing. You just have to read the book of Tobit to know that one. I mean, and angels participate in physical creation so that it can be used for healing. Yes, but they themselves don't pray for their healing. They can pray for our healing. And in creatures that are lower than us, the animals, they don't pray for healing either. They experience pain and sickness, but they don't ask God to heal them. They don't experience it that way. It's a human experience to recognize our physical condition is impaired or we're experiencing pain, and to turn to God for his help. Okay, so that's part of who we are, how we're made. Now, since we're talking about God in creation, we do well to look back to how all this started, and that's where we get great insight from the book of Genesis. After reading for 4 weeks from the letter to the Hebrews, now we turn to the first chapters of Genesis for a couple of weeks, and this is just very, very profound divine word to us. Today, we read the very beginning of the book of Genesis. We read about the first 4 days of creation. And in the beginning, there is nothing. God creates from nothing. He's the starting point of creation. There's all sorts of speculation about how things started and how the universe got to be the way it is. You know, the Big Bang theory and the idea of the expanding universe and all these things that physicists are often trying to figure out how it got to the point where it is now. It's pretty hard to figure it out because there's only so much evidence that we can glean from way back then. The famous James Webb Space Telescope now is reaching to the farthest edges of the universe to see what's going on out there, and it's throwing off the idea of the universe being a certain age or being a certain size or being expanding, because there are things very, very far away that are very developed and large and doesn't make sense. So we're left with a lot of uncertainty about how it all is. But a primary question is, or even before, why things are the way they are, why is there anything at all? Why is there anything at all? I mean, God didn't have to create anything. He was perfectly happy in himself. At some point, he decided it would be good. Well, he doesn't decide because he's always present. I mean, this is hard for us to get into, but he doesn't just decide all of a sudden, wake up one morning and say, I think I'm going to create the universe. It's part of reality as it is, which God has always known. But physical beings are not eternal, and so they did come into being at certain points of time. Because God did it that way. That's out of our hands and out beyond our comprehension. And this is what this reading reflects on. Well, where did everything come from? It came from God. Where do we get the idea that we're in charge of everything? God is in charge of everything, and he's the source of everything. And he does it in such a powerful and yet peaceful and orderly way. He says, let this be like this. And it happens that way. The power of the divine word. Let there be light. Let there be the sea. Let there be animals and plants. Let it just be like this. And it happens. Very easy for God. As I was reflecting on this creation and God sorting things out, you know, separating light and darkness, separating sky and earth and water and dry land, I had a memory of my childhood. Maybe because there's been a big snowstorm in my hometown, and so lots of snow. So I remember playing in the snow. And I know it doesn't, snow is a phenomenon here, but there's something about snow, not most of the time, it's you can't do much with it. It's powdery or it's hard, but at a certain temperature, snow gets very sticky, and you can push it together and it sticks together. That's the time when you make snowmen and snow forts and have snowball fights and this sort of thing. But certain times, when the weather conditions are right, snow is a lot of fun because you can do almost anything with it. Push it around, roll it around, and it's just made for creativity. So especially children, when they go out in the snow like that, you just naturally make things. You make snowmen, make tunnels, make forts, make, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I get that memory in my mind as if that's what God is doing. He's just playing. He's playing with creation. If he wants to make the sea, he can make it. It just push it together. I'm going to push the water over here. I'm going to push the land over here. I'm going to push the light up here. That's how easy it is for him. He's like a child. Or maybe a better example would be, I'm sure you played on the beach, play in the sand. When you're on the sand and near where the sand meets the water, sand has a quality that you can like make things out of it, make little castles and little tunnels, and you know, I'm sure you've done that on the beach, haven't you? You're not shaking your head. Anyway, well, that's like that. It's like that. Sand, wet sand, can be used to make things. It's a lot of fun. And this is what God does. I mean, God is a playful creator. And he didn't have to do it this way. This is one of the things that baffles the physicists. Why is it like this? If you think back of how science has gradually learned more and more about creation, in the old days, I mean, it was very clear that the sun was the most important thing in the sky. And the sun was unique. There was nothing like the sun. But with the invention of telescopes and the discovery of the vast distances, we started to realize, well, those little points of light out there are also suns. In fact, some of them are bigger and hotter than the sun is. It's just that they're so far away. And we realized, oh gosh, we had no idea. And then when the scientists discovered that other planets also have moons, it was earth-shaking. Like, we knew there's only one moon, and it's this moon. And it's exactly in the right place, and it has exactly this effect on the tides, and it's the perfect size for blotting out the sun. I saw an eclipse last year. You couldn't do it more perfectly. It's exactly the right distance and size to blot out the sun. But then they find out, well, gosh, you know, Jupiter has a bunch of moons, Saturn has a bunch of moons. And why do we have only one? So they start to, it could be done differently. It could be done completely differently. We think, you know, God started out with this. Scientists think he started out with this kind of a supercharged soup of hydrogen electrons or something like that. I mean, hydrogen, helium, nitrogen, oxygen. He could have done it differently, but he did it like this. And it completely up to his free, creative playfulness. Other creation stories are nothing like this. If you look into other cultures, there's always some kind of upheaval, cosmic conflict, gods warring over each other and, you know, tearing each other to pieces, and that turning the cosmos into pieces of gods and all these different things. Here, God says, I'm going to do it like this, and it happens like that. I remember one of my professors saying that he took 3 days of separation, separating everything, and then 3 days of ornamentation. Ornamentation, as if to say, it's like putting ornaments on your Christmas tree. It's decorating. He's just decorating his sandcastle. Now, I'm simplifying it because we have to think of it a certain way, but we know we haven't gotten yet to the creation of man, which takes us into a completely different level. But since we're here, reflecting on creation, what it really reveals is the power of God, the absolute power of God, the order of God, the peaceful unfolding of God's plan in creation before sin messes things up. Creation is beautiful and good. And what God does is good, which means reality, as it's given to us, is good. Part of the biggest problems in the human society is the rejection of reality, or the desire to live outside of reality as it is. That's a very sick approach, or we'll get into that some other time. But anyway, here we are, where the creation is good, and when Jesus enters into creation, when the Word by whom all this was done enters into the world himself, this power is made available to us, this healing, ordering, separating, decorating power is made available to us. It's especially evident in the sacraments. God, who is pure spirit, knows that we are not pure spirit, and so he doesn't give us only purely spiritual gifts. He gives us physical gifts, and he gives us grace through the means of physical things, water, bread, wine, oil. He uses his creation to do extraordinary spiritual healing. And that's something to celebrate, and that's what we celebrate today.